But it's a good idea.
Yeah.
You know, I got a good, you know, because I got a good story to tell. You want to hear it? Yeah.
Which one is it?
So yeah, so this Sufi is outside a mosque on all fours, and his disciples are on all fours, and they're looking for his eyeglasses, which he lost. And a CNN reporter comes by and says, well, do you know approximately where you lost the eyeglasses? And the Sufi says, yes, in the mosque. He said, in the mosque? So what are you doing outside? He says, the light's better.
That's so silly.
Not bad, eh?
If A O L old J
oh, yes.
O
yes
joke
yes
but with Sufis up the butt you up dated.
Yeah. It's like the how many can you psychiatrists does it take to scrutinize for?
Zen,
and how many
da, da, da. Zen
it's the same
joke.
Old joke
yeah,
going
yeah,
around
yeah.
and around.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a Zen joke.
Yeah. So. R O N D Rondi. Oh, you're talking about that? Well, he said it was better. Okay. So in Philadelphia, this was still before we stayed at fancy hotels.
Right.
Yeah.
And the woman that was, who was the director at this, it was kind of a high-end performance art space that were only letting us perform there because we were performing in New York. They kept saying, no, 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 no. And then they found out we were performing at some known gallery in New York.
Yeah.
Then they're interested. And so, but she had been trying to get us there the whole time. So we had a friendship with her, but now the board is like letting us come. So she says, you could stay with me. And if on the same trip, we were in New York, and Annie Sprinkle, who we hadn't actually physically met yet, she's like was a porn star. Mm-hmm. And at the time we met her, that's what she was. This is before she became a performance artist. And she was insisting that we stay with her, and we didn't want to.
No.
Because we thought, oh, God, there's just going to be sex and drugs. And,
and
you know, Frank says we're straight.
Yeah.
You know, and so, but she was like, she was not taking no for an answer.
No.
She was just like, this, you are staying with me. And so anyway, it's like we're thinking Annie's is going to be like, you know, just like dirty and da-da-da, and Ronnie's is going to be all highfalutin. We get to Annie. Well, finally, you know, we figured out. Annie sent us a poem called Annie Ellen. And it's about Annie, who's this flamboyant, sexy porn star, and Ellen is this little fat Jewish girl. And so Frank's, and it's this long poem where she describes both of them. Frank wrote back and said, we'll stay with Ellen.
Yeah.
And so, so that took care of that. We get to Annie's. Well, she wasn't like little baby doll PJs, but she was scrubbing her toilet out and like cleaning the windows and stuff. Yeah. She was just like meticulous housekeeper.
Right.
And we get to Ronnie's, and the space she puts us in is just roach infested.
Oh my God.
Just roach infested. Wow. And we're sleeping on the floor.
Ooh.
And she was in a state of deep depression because she was breaking up with her boyfriend, and the sink was filled with dishes, and it was just part of Philadelphia that you could ever imagine. So it was, you know, so much for our expectations. We ended up leaving. We ended up leaving. It was like we just realized we just can't. You know, we were going to be there for a bunch of days, and we had to work on this piece, and it was just like.
You were working, you were performing there.
We were performing there, and we get local people a lot of times.
Was she offended then?
Sure.
Well, she guilt-tripped us seriously, but we just, I mean, we had to bite the bullet, you know. It was rough. It was rough because, like, what do we do? She's going to just freak out, but we can't stay here.
No.
It's just terrible.
Right.
And, you know, and she was kind of sucking on it, too, you know, because she was into this depression thing. And so we just got in the phone book and found a really nice place in Chinatown that was having a special and just broke it to her, and her boyfriend drove us there kind of in the dead of night, and was very, but she got, I mean, it was okay, you know.
Adventures in Philly, when was this?
This was in the 80s.
In the 80s.
Yeah. Yeah. This was when we were still sleeping on floors.
Yes.
No, they got rough night.
Yeah.
Do? Any? Doing things? No, do? Thing? Like? That? H? A? P? P? Happen? Do things like that happen to you guys?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
We've traveled, you know, we've traveled and been in lots of different situations in Europe, you know, going to friends, and then we've stayed at different places. No, we haven't in the past 10 years. I wouldn't say I've said we didn't have situations where we have the roach-infested hotel.
Actually happened to me in Paris, not a roach infested, but all my luggage was stolen. I ended up staying at Shakespeare & Co., this bookshop, on a wire, not even a mattress, you know, a wire bed.
And
in the morning when I woke up, the whole room was full of people who had lost their luggage or had it stolen or whatever. So that was, of course it happened, you know. And you walk into, or people actually, who also visit you, who can be very difficult also in another way. So you're captured from that side.
Right.
But exciting things like that.
You, N, E, never know what you're gonna get.
That's so beautiful about life. Oh, so horrible.
That's
true. Oh, so horrible.
That's true. That's right. You never know what you're going to get. It's the same thing. Same thing like coming over here. I mean, we don't know what we're going to get.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And you got that jumping Monopoly set in front of you. That really, there's a whole bunch of stuff there. That's great. It's great, man. That's beautiful.
Yeah, this Hawken, he uses a computer. But
yeah,
it looks
Hawken
like in much the same way. Look at that.
He uses a computer. He started out with an electric typewriter, and then he went to the computer.
Same with Frank.
Yeah.
Oh,
we
you
should
also,
tell people about it.
Oh, yeah, look.
Tell people about it.
Yeah,
he's zooming in on his picture now.
We should, actually. Yeah. Show the cover as well and his name.
There you go.
iPower by Hawken Patterson. Swedish. Translated by myself and Jack, and dedicated to these two lovely people.
Yes,
Linda,
the translation is dedicated to Linda and Frank. And I think that I've even written something about, of course, with Hawken in the introduction, and I mentioned also these translations are the work of Agneta Falk. I mean, when I discovered the book, I began translating it. But as Aggie and I rode the Stockholm Metro during our stay there and later airplanes in Italy and back to San Francisco and on North Beach digs, I realized that she was actually passing me the bulk of the translations, as I am still a novice in Swedish and she native and nonpareil when it comes to that language. We would also like to dedicate this translation to Frank Moore, a spiritual and disabled brother of Hawken in Berkeley, California, another wild poet who sits in a chair with a board containing the alphabet and other essential logoi and phrases, which he points to with a wand affixed to his brow like a magical third eye, and which, because he has difficulty in utterance, his wife Linda brings to comprehension with staggering patience. The Moores, 2 years ago, invited Aggie and I on consecutive weeks to appear at their studio to telebroadcast our poetry for their international website and to converse as well. It was an unforgettable experience in communication and for both of us. Frank's poetry is also published in book form, and it is well known that the late Larry Eigner, who had a similar disability, as have Haakon and Frank, is considered one of the finest experimental poets of the American generation after World War II. Wow.
I just realized as you read that, did you see it? On that website.
It said website?
Yeah. Don't you love
website?
It? Finding those typos.
Well,
that's a dyslexic website and website. It doesn't matter, really, does it? Everyone will know. Maybe we should read a poem.
Should we read a poem of Haakon Jeanette? That might be nice.
The first one, maybe.
How about the very brief poems?
Yeah, the first one.
Aggie will read them in Swedish. You'll hear Swedish.
Wow.
Jag har pissat i Mississippi, Mexikanska golfen, tog emot det med värme i Atlantens kalla vatten, frös det, rullstolen tog mig vidare till många vatten, nu här i badkaret.
I've pissed in the Mississippi, the Gulf of Mexico, received it with warmth in the cold Atlantic waters, it froze. The wheelchair took me further to many waters, here now in the bathtub. Great, eh?
And the next one.
Go ahead.
Benet ont, biter ihop, vet att du inte kommer med dina varma händer, vet att det går över.
The leg, painful, bites together, knows. You're not coming with your warm hands. Nose, it passes by.
Det gryr, ser ensamheten från min säng klockan sju. Reser jag mig upp, smeker det nya.
It dawns, sees the loneliness from my bed. 7 o'clock. I get up, caress the new.
You like?
Yeah.
Very lovely.
P. O. Powerful.
Yeah.
Powerful, yes. I called it I power. I took the title. In title in Swedish is the power of the eyes. But I wanted to have eye power, to call it eye power with a pun, a play on the ego. Because, and I say this, I have inverted and contracted the title in order to evoke the double sense of an ego in motion, not simply because many of the poems reflect talk on startling motions within the poems themselves, but because of the extraordinary triumph over adversity, which is at the core of his writing, as with your writing.
I'm just trying to find the one which is really the title poem, in a sense. I can't... Yeah, there's so many here that...
It's a beautiful, beautiful little book. Really, I'm very pleased that I found it. Yeah. Last year we found it when we were there. We were in Stockholm.
I think I like that.
Which one? All right, Aggie, read this one. I'll read the English from here.
Kroppen vill inte, vägrar, kan inte. Hjärnan vill. Ska jag kontakta själens kraft, får det gjort.
The body won't refuse, can't. The brain wants, must. I make contact with the soul's power. It gets done.
Wow.
It's good.
Good, eh?
Have you?
I like that one.
L. M. Met him?
No, we have only written. We've
talked on the. I mean, via
the email.
Never met him.
We will from here, and also I'm sure you emailed to you We will send you or forward you his address. Mm. Well, he lists it here. It's
actually,
in here in the book.
Just, yeah. You look it up on the web.
Yeah, the address is in the book.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure that he would like to hear from you, and I'm sure you will hear, probably because Randy is sending him a whole bunch of copies of the book.
So is that all in English?
It's in my language.
It's both languages.
It's both languages.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah.
I like this one.
All right.
I've danced by myself far from others, now and then squeezes that have made me believe no one could keep up with my pace. Dancing made me warm. I've danced my whole life long. May I?
beautiful, beautiful.
H, E, hey, I, S, T, A, started, A, as, A, dancer. At C, Carnegie Hall.
Really?
That was the beginning. He was living in a community in Massachusetts, like 300 and some people, a commune. This is in the 70s. Right. And they had a band, Spirit and Flesh.
Right.
And the leader of the community was the one who wanted Frank there. The followers were very uncomfortable with Frank. When I, G, O, got there. Oh, well, Frank got hitched a ride there.
Yeah.
Because he had met some people that lived there when he was in Santa Fe. And so he decided to leave Santa Fe and go there. So he, unannounced, he just arrives. And, of course, the people that are hitched, that he got a ride with, they're just, like, leaving him. So he's there by himself.
Right.
And they didn't want him. The community people didn't want him. And then the leader, who is this, like, ex-Hell's Angel biker dude comes out, and he right away looks at Frank and gets him and said, you know, Frank, you know, you get points if you're good to Frank. And
right.
So he was the one that kind of pulled Frank in. But when they were the band was playing and Frank started dancing, and everybody told him that he should stop dancing because it wasn't spiritual. And so Mike, the leader of the thing, when they had their big gig at Carnegie Hall, he had Frank put on stage to dance.
That's right. Yeah, wonderful.
Yeah. I M A made it into Cream Magazine, which is at the time, I guess, they're rocking.
Bravo.
Fantastic.
It has been all D downhill from there.
I understand.
J. O. John. S. I. Sinclair.
Oh, John.
S. A. Said. To. T. Tell. You, hi from him. He was a guest on here a couple of weeks ago.
Right. Oh, it's John. Yeah. It's John. It's a dear friend. And John will next. I don't know if you remember. There was a minister, a Unitarian minister in Berkeley, who's a dear friend of mine. He's in Pasadena now, named Paul Sawyer. He's a poet, and he a friend of John's. And he is also a friend of a poet who's 93 years old, named Vincent Farini, on the East Coast, who was like the brother of a brother of Charles Olson, the poet. Mm. And for his 93rd or 94th birthday, they want to bring Vincent Farini to Venice, California. Mm. They want me to come down. And John Sinclair, because John is also a good friend of Vincent's.
Oh, wow.
Yes, John, I know John for many, many years.
How did you meet, you and John? How did you and John meet?
I met John through, interestingly enough, after he was out of prison, I met him when I worked with the Communist Labor Party in Chicago. It was at in Chicago. We were on some event, some cultural event that he also performed at. But he, you know, he was very, he's a very respected poet and artist and. And also because, you know, he really was given a terrible term, you know. That was, I think he spent 9 years in prison. Wasn't
oh,
it?
That's a long,
For just having some marijuana in those days.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, it was just like he smoked a joint.
Tea, set up, and he was set up.
And he was set up, yes. To bring that, you know, they wanted to make that anti-drug thing.
Yeah.
And so they set him up. And he, and also, wasn't he was also working with the Panthers? He was like the head of the White Panthers.
Right, right. Well, he's, yeah, they, that was why they S-E set him up. Because of that.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. Yeah. He's a wonderful guy. He gave me, he was in about a year and a half. I had another event. I had a reading myself on the night. He gave a reading in City Lights and a slideshow. He did a slideshow and a reading in City Lights for a new book, I think, that had come out of his.
Mm-hmm. He is in... on Lover. He has a weekly show on Lover
that he does
in Amsterdam, but you know, we pick
it. He's in Amsterdam now.
That's where he lives most of the time.
No, I'm kidding.
But he comes through the United States like once a year, and we're one of his regular stops to be on this show.
Yes, that's great. Yeah, that's great.
He gave us his entire music collection.
Wow.
It's like Frank had, you know, for Frank does his homework. Right. And he like reads up on people, what they've been up to. And he read about that he has this incredible music collection.
Right. John does.
And so at the beginning of the show, we're just sitting around and Frank said, oh, by the way, can Lover have your music collection? He hands us his laptop right there on the spot. He said, yeah, it's all there. And he gives it to Mikey. So we actually were able to take the whole music collection that night while he was here. And it's like, you know, it's amazing. I mean, it's
what has it mainly got? I mean, is it jazz?
It's Mikey.
It's jazz. Blues, New Orleans.
Yes.
A lot of New Orleans and Mississippi kind of stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of blues and jazz.
Fabulous. And it's a lot of the stuff that you haven't heard of.
Yeah. He seems like local people that were like, didn't kind of get out, or maybe
you can listen to music all the time.
Yeah.
And things you don't know yourself, which is always nice.
Yeah, it's really, you think, yeah.
Somebody else's, you know, input is important.
And then there's his music too, like his, the MC5 and anything that he's been involved in is in there too.
Yes.
Yeah. You get results. You get everybody's music collection. Yeah, we do. And
yeah, that's great.
Do you listen?
What did he say, that we're like the only one of like two people or something that has his entire collection?
Great. So do you listen to music a lot?
Well, it's because Lover is on 24 hours a day,
so
we often have
Lover.
Lover is on 24 hours a day.
Yes,
24 hours a day. So the mix is like a lot of that.
Yeah.
And the mix is, well, how many songs do we have now?
About 80,000
songs that are just mixed at random. So, and it's every genre and spoken word thing you can imagine.
Really?
So,
can you imagine 80,000?
Oh, P. people R T R A I trained.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, to just listen to one genre at a time. So we found that that puts people through changes.
Right.
Yeah. I don't like going from classical to hip hop to Mumia Abdul-Jamal. It's,
so how do you mix it?
It's
just
random.
It's just
random.
Totally random.
It's totally random. So it does. I think the computer does a thing where it won't repeat something.
Yeah.
You know. So it's always.
So it knows that much.
It keeps track of it. Yeah.
And it's, the center of it is here.
Yeah. This is it.
Yeah. This is it.
And then we have DJs around the country that do their shows. Most of them do it and give it to us like recorded. But we have some that do it live. And they do it from their house, but it comes, you know, it's streamed. Like P-L-A. The person that was on before us here, Plate, is in Arizona. Tucson, Arizona. Yeah. He does a show every Sunday. He plays live music for an hour. That's his show.
Yeah, but that's, he does that. And that, he was the guy who was... giving the message that just
Was Corey and Alexi.
Okay.
So what happened was he finished at 8 and we weren't ready. And
okay.
So Corey and Alexi took the stream from and they just are in a holding pattern playing music until we're ready.
Oh,
and then they announced that.
Oh, very nifty.
So it works out of two.
This is the main place, and then we have it set up down at the Blue House where you went
last time
as kind of our shadow location. So, like, if there's any problem here, we have a place to go from, so Lover's Never Down.
Yeah.
And also, we've started doing this thing where we have, because we get, like, bands now that on tour want to stop here.
Really?
So we have, like, 5, 6, 7-piece bands, and, you know. So the Blue House is big.
Yeah.
So on nights that we have a big band, we'll do the show from there.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's really amazing. We are... the M-A-I main P place to P-L play for a lot of for bands. I mean, the word has gotten out. So now, I mean, we've started doing two Shaman's Dens on weekends, which I don't know what's going to happen with that. Like next weekend, it's Saturday and Sunday. And then I think last weekend, it was Saturday and Sunday, too.
Shaman.
This is what that. The show is called Frank Moore's Shaman's Den.
Oh, yeah. That was. They wrote about that.
Yes.
That was in the East. Was that what it was called in the East? The newspaper.
What
big
newspaper?
Article in the
newspaper. Yeah. The East Bay Express. Right. They wrote about it. Yes, that's right.
But do you get a lot of response from people listening to it?
Not really. I mean, we never have.
No, but you
know obviously
people
are listening to it, and everybody wants to be on the show.
Randy
and stuff.
Randy told me he listens to it.
Yeah.
And just as we were standing, you know, at the,
the
North Berkeley Station, and I'm sure a lot of other people around Berkeley listen to it.
Yeah.
But it's much wider than...
Well, people all over the world listen. It's international.
In other words,
we just looked at a map. Because you get these little dots of where people are tuned in, like every point that you can imagine. Name some of the countries.
Really?
It was like New Zealand and Australia, Singapore, Malaysia, Philippines.
Really?
India, Russia, lots from Europe.
Like Europe and the United States were the bulk
of
the
listeners. And you can actually, you
South
can
America.
See. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like it blows your mind to think about somebody in Malaysia tuning
like,
Lover.
Yeah.
In a week, that was just in a week. That's all just like in a week's time. This is all the countries where people were listening.
Right.
See?
Iceland.
It's the living theater in the 21st century.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. Yeah.
That's great.
C. R. I. T. I. Critic. Critics have C com, complained, COMP,
mm-hmm.
oh, compared,
oh,
oh, mm-hmm. to the Living Theater. I've compared Frank's mm-hmm. work to the Living to Theater.
Well, I saw, you know, when I read the mm-hmm. thing in the newspaper.
Yeah.
And I knew the Living Theater
right.
because I was the editor and translator of Antonin Artaud mm-hmm. and the Living Theater.
Right.
Artaud was their god.
Right.
And
right.
so, and when I read that, I said, well, this really is in the tradition.
This
of
is
the Living Theater.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Sure.
They, in fact, they, in the 60s,
yeah,
I are read in PLA Playboy. Oh, an article about Julian Beck and the Living
yes,
Theater.
Oh, yes, and Judy Belina.
Right.
Yes.
And then when we were, and then in the late 70s, when we were
right.
doing a show at the punk club in San Francisco,
right.
we got a lot of press, and the same person that wrote that article about Julian Beck came to write an article about Frank for an adult magazine.
Right.
And Frank was, like, really thrilled that,
yes.
you know, it's that connection. Yeah.
We actually read with the Living Theatre.
We read with Judith
yeah.
Melina and Hanan Reznikov, who
in Naples,
who is with,
in Italy.
Who is our partner yeah. since Julian died, in Naples at a giant in the biggest castle. It had 40 rooms, huge galleries, and it was homage to the Living Theatre. It was
Two years ago. It was a fantastic exhibition.
It was an incredible
wow.
exhibition of painters and photographs of all the Living Theater, and a lot of European artists had big room galleries for their work. It was and we read. We were asked to read with
Judith
Melina and Hanan.
Wow.
And we had lovely readings there
wow,
at this Castello San Elmo, the biggest castle in Naples. Yeah. But she's a friend that we know from Italy before that even.
She spends a lot of time.
We have mutual friends and people who are in the Living Theater. There's even one person over in North Beach. A guy named Mel Clay was with the Living Theater and then came out after the theater went to Europe. He decided to come out to San Francisco. And all along the way, we met people in the Living Theater. And that's what I thought when I first met you. And then I read that, I said, this guy's on the Living Theater. Well, you are, really, because you also like to throw that shock effect right at the status quo. That's what I like, baby.
F I funny. What the community? They had that community we were talking
right.
about. The guy that ran it has since passed away, and they had a reunion in back in Massachusetts, but they gathered everybody up by email
mm-hmm.
and
yes.
and so now they have this listserv where people talk and you know, sure enough,
right.
Frank has really raised in hell. Oh my God.
That's wonderful.
Oh, it's really intense on every level, and and nobody will really kind of say why exactly
yeah.
they are freaking out about him. They're saying people are leaving the list because of you, Frank. You know?
Wow.
He said, "Well, what exactly? What
yeah,
are
what
you
do
saying?"
You? Yeah.
And they won't answer. They won't answer what it is. But we think what it is the website. That they went to the, it's not anything Frank actually said
it's
on
the website.
Listserv. They went to the website
yeah.
and freaked out. And rather than
on the website?
The website? I mean, I don't know. It's what we do.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's nudity, you know.
You know, naked bodies.
What myopia. I mean, incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, look at that big thing, even when that, what's her name, at a football game?
Oh, yeah, a bare breast. Yeah.
And there was such a hue and cry. It was incredible.
Yeah.
And apologies.
Yeah.
I mean, you think, what, I mean.
Yeah.
Wow.
And
that is a real deep repressiveness in this society.
What?
The most natural condition of human beings.
It's not totally. I mean, you know, you have naked bathing all over the place.
Not in the United States.
No, not in the United States, but if you go to Europe, everywhere. Yeah. But then suddenly you haven't got a sunburn, and people actually, this is a difficult point, because if you go to any Arab country, you just can't do that. So suddenly you have to put all your clothes on, and I suppose you have to know where to draw the line. Mm. But in America, you can't. Well, the nudist beaches.
There's nude beaches and stuff. But
where I grew up, you know, we used to swim naked next to the fishermen. They were not even interested. They were more interested if you put clothes on, because, you know, naked became such a norm.
Where was
in
this?
The summer in Sweden.
Oh, yeah. That,
you know,
yeah,
no,
yeah.
But they, you know, if you could actually go up to them with breasts and have a chat about the fish.
Yeah. Mm.
But if you put on a bikini bra, they thought that was really sexy.
Right, right.
Yeah. And that's true, actually, if you like.
Exactly. Yeah. What? We? Oui. Get a away with.
What, you
what do you mean on the web on TV?
Yeah.
Well, we have the cable access.
Yeah.
And we're on some nights 6 hours straight.
Yeah.
We've pretty much taken over the cable access channel.
Wow.
It's all like after 10 p.m. programming.
Right. Yeah.
But I mean, you can. Yeah. It's like I don't know. People don't take advantage of the public access.
It's true, Frank.
But we fought because they tried to knock us off, and we fought, and we had the ACLU backing us. Mm. And once we won that, we've pretty much just gone whole
Took
hog.
Yeah.
And they're not, they can't say anything.
Oh,
so we do all sorts of erotic stuff and naked stuff, and I think we're very popular.
You know,
a lot of people like the show.
Mm. Good, sure, good, good.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I had a piece.
This will be on that.
On radio.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I thought for sure, this is a poem I wrote, that this poem could never appear on the radio. It's an attack on Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld after Abu Ghraib, but it's based on the images from Tijuana Bibles. You know Tijuana Bibles? Mm. They were very hardcore pornographic magazines that I grew. I saw my first sexuality when I was a kid in New York from a Tijuana Bible. Well, I wrote this poem that was an attack on the government after Abu Ghraib, and Justin Demeng, who was working with KAPU, said, "Well, we'll put it on the air after 10 o'clock." I said, "Impossible." I was really quite amazed that it went on the air after 10 o'clock.
Legally, they're allowed to do that, although, say, with KPFA, they won't.
No,
even though legally
KPFA is afraid.
Yeah, yeah.
They got KPFA intimidated.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons for Lover.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons for KPU. And the, because, yes.
Yeah. I-S-A. Said the seven dirty words, George Carlin, seven dirty words on KPFA.
You said them?
Yeah.
Good, good. Good, good.
It am made it in to a book. We just had a guest recently who was here hawking her book, and she read about that.
Really?
Excerpt from
lovely,
she was
lovely.
Listening that
yes,
night.
Yes, lovely.
She really liked that. Yeah.
Pretty sure.
Would you read something?
Sure. I'll read something. Okay. Never again. They were gassed, burned by the millions simply because they existed. Those who survived said, never again. They were asked to come to Hanoi and continue the socialist revolution. They responded, never again. We will never again trust any government. We will make our home in Palestine, defeat the Arabs there, scatter them, or let them live as ragged shadows in the camps of our occupation. We will live in and on the capital of America, as Israel by name, as the Jewish nation, and never again be holocausted for the crime of simply being. But even as Israel grew and prospered, those whom it displaced and arrested were whispering, never again. Poor and landless, they built their resistance and fought and lost again and again to Zionism's army of American weaponry, the language of socialism, of the friendship and harmony of peoples of different cultures, died of attrition in the Middle East from money, deals, dunny meals, doomy mules, dummy moles, mummy dolls. The Star of David unfurled over the land, but the real Davids were in the streets throwing stones at the Goliath. Oh, Philistine irony and reversal of the Hebrews. They, who are the poorest and stateless, who've turned their hatred of submission to slavery into martyr brigades of suicided human weapons and called their brethren to join their attack upon the ferocious colony of the United States of exploitation, they, the poorest and homeless, in whom the only solution still breeds, the only solution that isn't genocide or fratricide or a final solution itself, where hand clasp and words can still mutually open the gates to the language of the future socialism of New Israel and New Palestine, is where never again will be the united cry of both, aimed at the land of the fraud and the home of the greed.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. See, was not, N, E, never again, O, F, R, or, no, was it O, R, originally, N, E, never, A, G, A, I, N, never again, G, E, N, O, genocide?
Genocide.
Yes.
Yeah.
Originally, never again was, that was the expression that the many Jews after the Holocaust made in reference, but I was using in this poem it ironically because of course the identity with the state and the state, I mean, the state cries terrorism, but they don't recognize, they are the state terrorists against poor people in the world. And it's the same thing here. I mean, even I'm looking at the paper today and they're describing in how to this day the poor in New Orleans in the United States are in horrible conditions. And after this, almost a year after the government, they, and then in effect, the the government has spent so much money on the war in Iraq, in Afghanistan, and here in the United States, where virtually the poor are utterly demolished, and all the money that's gone there has either not been used in any really good way, or just to prop up.
They don't have. They don't want the poor back there.
No. That's right. That's right. Like the poor anywhere. If you're poor, you know, you might as well, you belong to a criminal class in this country if you're poor. They want you away, like you don't exist.
Out of sight.
Out of sight. Yeah.
In the C L O S, in the closet.
In the closet.
That's right. Right.
Or miraculously surviving somewhere where they can't be seen.
But have not U-H-E-A heard P I P O P O E T poetry is not S U supposed to be P O political. That is what one beat poet told us.
Yes. That was the limitation of the beats poet.
Anything, poetry is everything.
All poetry is political.
But poetry is everything. I mean, otherwise it wouldn't be poetry if it isn't.
Why didn't you read one, Ag?
Yeah, I write from it. I'm going to read this from it. It's from a different angle. And it's two little poems. One is called Otherness. Otherness in the sense of being different, black, white, green, whatever you want. I don't have to explain that, do I? So if I can find it, that is. And I will. I know it's here. So,
this is familiar.
Here we are.
We had Erica alphabetize all of Frank's poems.
So, otherness. It's not because I don't love you that I can't see your face. It's just that I can't face your face without eliminating mine. When you look at me, I turn away, so I don't quite notice your eyes. If only I could look at you without you looking back at me, I could begin to see you, discover the curve of your lips resembling mine, that on the slope of your cheek runs a river as deep and dark as the one I grew up near, as shallow and dry. And maybe if you dared look back at me and saw your tears filling my eyes, we could begin to replace that never-ending fear with love. And the other one is a little one. So, you know, that one is a very important poem to me in a sense, because before I got to that, I was thinking about this so much, about this fear of otherness, of being different. And anyway, my next one is a short little one. Ontology of happiness. As strange as it sounds, I'm happy about not being happy. I mean, there is so much love in the world, shrouded in violence, the war, the rain, the war, and there is a sun, you, with your big warm palm on my back, rising out of all the cracks in our room. The body I fall in and soul I fall in and out of when I'm happy about not being happy. Oops.
Blah, blah, blah. Not bad.
Yeah.
The little ones. The little ones, we're right.
Right. Yeah, this
are,
is... Oh, go ahead, go ahead.
Are you A H B E A beat poet? Are you a beat poet?
Frank.
He's an offbeat poet.
They, they C A they call you that.
Well, you're a bit of a beat poet.
I came up to the beat, but I don't think that the, but actually I really have been involved with, you know, I really have been involved for many years with the communist movement, and the beats have been mainly associated themselves with anarchism. And I understand that many of my friends and have been, but I've often wanted them to go deeper, and I'll read this poem to sort of indicate. And, this called, Is This House of Hunger, for the American kids who go to sleep each night without supper. This house of hunger has millions of kids in it. Breakfast and lunch is all they're worth. Fat Exxon and Bechtel have billions of bucks in them. What pretty profits to set before King Death. Banks stink with the stench of unmitigated greed. Ms., Mr. and Mrs. Indifference included in their digital speed. While those kids lie abed each night without even a cup of bouillon in their trembling hands. Oh, go kill the children in other lands, America, you shootiful. And cover for the murders you plant in your own backyard. Keep insisting you're democracy, but in the starving darkness, those sad lost eyes know the truth of your icy lie, that you sold all the marbles in their little sacks to the bullies who applaud because they won't give them back. And you've stolen the bread that cried for their mouths and turned it into dirty dough. And that's why when finally they manage to fall asleep, their dreams call you the haunted house. Put a spell of the sun on you to burn you down so that greedy spirits flee and fields grow rapidly, good things for hungry little bellies. To eat.
Would you read my L O C O okay, lock, oh, locked in, locked out. Would you read one of Frank's poems?
Of course, of course.
Want to get it? It, F, I, fits, that. Last poem.
Ah, yeah, good, good. Good, good.
Oh, here I get it. Yeah. There it is. So it's, okay, so it's several, about 4 pages, I think.
Sure, sure.
It starts right there.
Okay. Okay. All right. Locked In, Locked Out by Frank Moore, March 12th, 2004. Evolution searches out potential within every life form, within every experiment, flowing through change, flowing through adaptations into new possibilities. This tide wave moves everything, shapes everything, leaving everything which doesn't find the ever-changing potential within its soul behind. And just didn't live out within the dynamic dance of existence. Failures are the golden steps of expanding creation. But we civilized humans have been denied for most of the blink of our history, most of our potential, the tide wave has been dammed up. Evolution has been funneled down into a narrow, high-pressure laser focused for profit and power of the hidden few. Most of our potential is locked in, locked away, locked out, locked up. Locked away in closets, locked up in factories of meaningless work, locked away in warehouses of waiting to die. Death waits, a dull lifetime to come. Locked outside the margins, locked outside on the homeless streets, locked inside the suburbs of isolation, locked within the walled communities of comforting, unreasoning fear, locked up within well-paid sitcoms, locked out toiling in the fields, not allowed to eat the food, dying in the false famine, dying from thirst in the African dust, manufactured from bottled demand, dying from sickness, preventable, curable, locked away within the dark other, locked in the kitchen, cooking artificial food of bland, pretending routine, not fulfilling any need or love, locked down in chains, on the sofa, on the shrink's couch, absorbing unattainable desires, locked in gridlock, not coming, not going, just sitting within unmoving isolation, listening to the latest muzak of loveless loneliness, all shining and cold, locked away in the passionless bedroom with the glass ceiling, tied down in the bed of hopelessness, tied down, locked up in the nursing home, lifetimes of wisdom dismissed and forgotten, locked up in padded cells, dangerous, healing imagination being burned up by electric shock, burning up the trash that could save us all, locked up on death row, within the isolation cell, lies change, it will not die, even under tortures of 10,000 years, just lock it up, damn it up with the oily gum of dogma, manufacture fear and mistrust of the other, of difference, pour the many flavors of this poison of bigotry from childhood in mother milk, in God's image, on the blackboard of coloring within the lines, lock what's acceptable, normal, within the lines, then send these good citizens off on crusades of killing of the different other, of killing off diversity, which is the curse of profitability. The brew of bigotry blinds the eyes to red is the color of all human blood, blinds us to we are all locked in, locked up, locked away on the plantations of slavery, in the sweatshops of suppression, in the factory farm fields of exploitation, in the occupied territories of closing walls, of refugee camps, of wandering Jews, of death camps, warehouses of all kinds filled with waiting to die living hopes, dreams, loves, imagination, cultures of the human spirit which do not fit into power, wealth, and the controlled reality. Yep. We're all in there, including most of you, believe you are the masters and the gods in your dank cubbyholes of fears and addictions. And within ourselves, we have been digging throughout the ages underground passages, linking passions together when we reach to touch one another. The bars melt like butter. We sing together in words that the masters can't understand. We create together, dream, imagine together. We hope and make love together behind the dam in evolution. The silly, mentally retarded girl giggles as she runs to hug an absolute stranger. This is hope. Of evolution. The police holds fires, high pressure profits, blasting of shortages through the dam's hole, business as usual. But it looks like evolution is about to burst through the dam. Will it destroy all of us? Who knows? We always have lived with doomsday, judgment day around the corner. Sometimes it came, sometimes it didn't. But I'm betting that our underground potential will be released in the coming flood and will expand. But then, this is written by a guy who was supposed to have died long ago in one of those death cells. There's always hope hidden up our sleeves. Love. Love, love.
Thanks.
Thank you.
When did you write that? In
204. He wrote in March 204. Yeah.
That's
they don't L K. They don't know we have a N E network. T H R O through out a throughout H I history.
That's true.
How do you L I live W I with out C O compromising?
The same way you do.
I know, but you want, this is for people who are watching.
Yeah. We write. We write. Because to write is to, you know, William Blake said something really once very beautifully. That the most divine thing is to set another before you.
Mm.
Now, if you think about that, to set another before you means to hold someone before you, before yourself. That's one thing. But to set another before you is also to a placing another. And it could also refer to the creation of a poem as another... Mm. As another object of yourself, that come from yourself, to set it before you, perhaps to read it, so that you know, to be read that way.
But that's not really what he meant by that.
Well, I think he means it's a very evocative thing.
To put someone before you,
yes.
To think of other,
of course
before yourself.
But I was relating it
you
to
were
the
relating
idea
it,
of,
oh,
of
yes,
writing.
Of the writing,
of,
yeah.
Of a poem.
Yeah.
Because I often say, everybody is a poet. We know that. Everybody is a poet.
But not willingly. Not everyone is willingly wanting to be a poet.
Because what is, after all, a poem? I don't know, after 72 years, someone said to me, what's a poem? I said, I really don't know, but I do know it's the most powerful thing in the world.
When it's powerful.
I know that a poem, that a poem is the most powerful thing in the world.
Music, I think, is also very powerful.
Do you L I live A P O E poem? Do you live a poem?
I live a life to write a poem. I don't live a poem. I wouldn't say I lived a poem. Someone else might say that of me. But I live to write a poem to serve. That is the way I serve the revolution, by writing. By writing.
But do you live in order to write, or do you write in order to live?
No, I live in order to write. No,
which is, this is different. No, but many people actually, it's a fair question in the sense that some people live so they can create, or create so they can live. There's a fine balance and difference.
Well, I suppose there's a certain tautology there, but...
I thought, Frank's, your question was very good. Do you live the poem? Because that is actually a very, very good question. Some people actually also, I think, forget to live so they can write instead of living first and then yes. creating.
Yes.
Well, I don't think that I would say I live the poem, because if I said before that I thought that a poem was the most powerful thing in the world, if I said I'd live the poem, I'd face the danger of a kind of ego that's why I said, that's why I was confused, because I don't associate it with power that way.
Do you F C R create A P O E poem, or D I or discover a poem?
No, good. That's a very good question. I discover, because the poem writes me.
Yes.
The poem writes me. The language writes me. It writes more than me, but it writes including me. I am just, and as you are, we are only vessels, like in the poem that I read here, The Lockout. You are a vessel for an expression of a social and political moment, increment in time, that ultimately is designed to raise and elevate the consciousness of the listener or the reader with what is going on in this particular increment of time, as that resonates to in a historical way to the past, as well as speaks to the future. That's what a poem can do. But you yourself are the vessel for the
we L I listen. As poets, we listen.
We listen. And in listening, we receive from within. We receive within the energies, the desires, the joys, the tragedies of those whom we live among, and we express them in their transformative hope, because always the poem is the essence of the language of hope.
I don't think I C R create I C H A. I channel.
Channel. Okay.
Channel means concentrate.
No. Like it kind of comes through you.
Rather than him creating it.
That's right.
You're in reception of.
Yes. T O O. That too. Mm. Oh, well, you said as in concentrate. Yeah. He said that too.
Yes. That's what we do. Everybody does that. Everybody does that. In one degree or another.
No, not everybody.
You don't think everyone does it?
No, people do it differently. Mm. Many people actually.
They do it differently, but everybody.
But I mean, everyone doesn't. It doesn't come from the same source, or they don't go about it in the same way. Some people construct, comes from somewhere else. I mean, at best, I think one lives in reception, and what, like you say, it's channeled through you, at best.
M-O, most people would, were, T-O, told, they cannot.
Mm. It's true.
Yeah, that's true. Mm. It's true. Mm. Yes.
J, A, L, M, jam. Mm. The jamming, like last week, we had musicians here from New York City, kind of accomplished musicians, had never met us or anything, it was all done through email and all through their manager.
Yeah.
And Frank said, can I jam with them?
Yeah.
And so they very politely said yes. We thought, do they know? You don't know how much people, do look and see anything about us. But it actually turned out that they really, really, really liked it. It was three guys.
Yeah.
And Frank played the piano and did vocals and plays the chime. And and they had performed. And then the end of their performance set was the jam. And then the interview was about jamming and as being listening.
Right.
Jamming as listening. Mm. And the he said most people think of what most times jamming refers to a series of solos.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, I really
actually
knew what that meant.
I thought first you meant jamming, stopping, but you mean jamming together, musically.
Musically,
I always thought
that
that's what it meant.
Jamming is listening, is receiving the other.
That's lovely.
That's what it's.
Yes.
Listen to you, and I can follow you, and you continue, and it's good.
F. O, follow. E, each. Following each other.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Just that's the way. That's a good jam.
Yes.
It's a good jam.
Listening and
listening and following. That's good.
That's a singing also
sing together. You want me to tell you something? I know a little bit about Kabbalism, too, and Now, for example, you take your name, Frank Moore, FM. Now, I think that you may be one of the centers of all the FM, all the radio
stations. Yes.
And this is Frank.
FM stands for Frank Moore.
And as I said the other time, I know who Frank Moore is. There's that famous poem by Charles Olson called The Librarian, which ends with it's written about Gloucester and the people in Gloucester. Mm. And the last line of the poem is, who is Frank Moore? That's the way the poem ends. And when I came in the first time, I said, I know who Frank Moore is.
W, E, well, don't R E V E reveal my S E C
secret
identity.
That's great.
Don't tell him.
Lay that down. Yeah. Take that.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. R E A read. Read more.
Read more.
H E hey. I M B A N band. You are banned from B O both poetry and C and music clubs.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, the let's see. I mean, I guess the poetry thing is more like when Frank would read his poems about standing up to whatever.
Right.
Everybody was like this until there was an actual situation involved where you'd have to stand up, but it was in the poetry scene, and all the poets got real nervous. What the story was? Well, you're talking about the most. There were a number of situations. The one, which one are you talking about? The one in Oakland, or Frank was invited to be a featured reader at a place in Oakland, and he had met the woman that curated the poetry reading at this highfalutin event, this annual event in Oakland, and so. The week that his poetry reading was scheduled to happen, that East Bay Express cover article came out.
Right.
And the owners of the cafe said to the woman who booked us, he's not going to be doing any of that nude stuff at his poetry reading.
Right.
And so she asked Frank, and he says, I have a policy to never talk about what I'm going to do at an event.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, parenthetically, as if I know, you know. But he said, but I'll say this, I'm always invited back, which really should have been enough, you know.
Yet.
And it was a R. E A reading plus it was a poetry reading so like you know what is he going to do he's going to go and read poems so that's that and then as we're walking out the door to actually go to the reading I pick up Frank's email one last time and she says you're canceled. And so, you know, Frank says, oh, no, we're not. We get in the car anyway, and we beat her there.
Yeah.
And we sit down, and we order dinner or something. I don't know. We're all kind of hanging out. And she comes in, and she just freaks. She says, what are you doing here?
Oh, my.
You're not allowed here. I canceled you. And Frank tried to actually, like, talk to her.
Right.
And she wouldn't talk to him. She wouldn't say anything to him. She said, I'm going to call the police. And so she ended up canceling the reading because we wouldn't leave. We wouldn't leave. We were just there. So she said, okay, I'm canceling it. And so there were all these poets there. I mean, all these poets that are at every reading here that are the ones that have were like this about Frank's readings. And so Frank says, well, if it's canceled, let's us all take turns reading poems. You know, we're here. Let's just do it. Well, all these poets move to the back of the place, distancing themselves from us. They don't want to have anything to do with us.
Really?
So there's a few people there. And they, you know, so Frank said, okay, you know, who wants to go first? So a blind woman reads first, and then an 80-year-old reads second.
Good,
you
know,
so by the time the 80-year-old woman is reading, the owners have arrived and the Oakland police have arrived.
Oh,
and the Oakland police drag this 80-year-old woman out of the place, screaming. She's screaming.
Oh, no.
And they drag her out. Nobody will talk to Frank. I go up to the owners. I said, Frank would like to talk to you about what's going on here. Wouldn't do it. I say to the cop, Frank wants to talk to you. He's the one that this is all about. Nobody wants to talk to him. So finally, we go outside, and we're all, you know, the handful of us are outside, and the owners are in there with the cops, and everybody's like this, and all the poets are in there in the back.
Right.
And so Frank says, okay, we'll just do the reading out front. We'll just do it out front. And, you know, who's next? And so he says to me, go in and tell the poets we're ready to start the reading. Again, these are the ones that are always cheering us on. And they wouldn't. So we ended up taking you in. So Frank says, I'll go in. And so we're wheeling Frank in. And the cops say, you're not allowed in here anymore. And I said, Frank needs to talk to the poet. So the cop is like, oh, okay.
Okay.
Let's wheel Frank back there. And the Frank goes up to the poets and he says, the reading is starting. Why aren't you out there? The poetry is on the sidewalk. The poetry has been kicked out of the restaurant. Why aren't you out there? They're all sitting with their backs to us, not even pretending they're not listening. And the cop says, he asks, are you with them? He says to them, and they said, no, we're not with them. And so we leave, and
into
we
the
do
gang, the poets, the gang around the up at the Mediterranean.
Yeah, they're the guys that go to all the readings. It's
but
like
why
there's
were
a
they
crowd.
Acting like this?
Because nobody wanted to get on the bad side of the restaurant and the woman that puts on the reading, because they don't want to be banned from the readings, which we are, you know, and they didn't want to do that. And it's not the first time something like that happened.
No, but that's actually quite disgusting to not stand up for somebody like
that.
It'll be their turn.
Always causing trouble.
It'll be their turn.
And we did the reading. We did the entire reading. We had an audience out there. And the cop ended up saying, you can't do it. And so we, first of all, I said, you need to talk to Frank. So finally, I got him to come over and talk to Frank. That's when everything changed. Yeah. He said, you can't do it out here. Frank said, is it illegal to be out here? He said, well, it's illegal to block their door. If we're not blocking their door, is it illegal?
Right.
Well, it's illegal to sit on their bench. If we're not sitting on their bench, is it illegal? Well, no, I guess it's not illegal. Frank said, great. He said, you want to hang out? And he listened to the poems.
Oh, brilliant.
So he became our buddy, you know, and the owners had to stay in there the whole time because they were so uptight. And that article, the article that was on the stands all over the Bay Area, all of a sudden, all the people that are in the cafe that don't have anything to do with the reading want to know what's going on. So you have a whole restaurant full of people reading this article about us, trying to figure out why Frank is being kicked out of the restaurant.
That's good. That's
what a story.
But that's many years ago, and still Frank doesn't get invited to poetry readings around here.
Really?
Many years ago. Yeah. Well, how
no,
about
but
that
you're
poem?
Here, and these poets, some of these
poets
have
the
come
whole
here,
world.
No?
Have we had any of the local poets here? Not the ones that were involved in that.
Randy was here, but
Every before that we have had poets before that incident.
Yeah. But Randy, for example,
but
you
Randy
know.
Has been here, but he wasn't.
He was never a guest on this show.
No.
Isn't that right, Randy?
Randy Finglin?
No, he was
never.
Well,
he told me he was here, but at
A different capacity.
Maybe in a different capacity.
Yeah.
A few months ago.
Maybe it was in the other house.
It was in the other house? Could it have been?
Mikey? Don't know. Don't know.
No, nothing.
Anyway, he's a good guy.
Yeah.
Randy's
a
good guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure. Don't. No. R. Read. Read.
Read.
I.
Oh, here's something to really get. Here's a minute. This was for a birthday party for Fidel Castro. Mm-hmm. So I wrote this poem for his birthday. The president of the other America has fallen ill, and it is his birthday. We wish him happy birthday and a speedy recovery. Mm. By the other America, we don't simply mean his brothers and sisters in Venezuela, Bolivia, Chile, Peru, Brazil, Haiti, and the like. We mean also the 37 million people living destitute and in misery in these disunited states, of whom 6 million kids go to bed hungry every night, while a murder machine waves the false flag of security and makes war on the poor of the world. What is more insecure than the empty belly of a child? The president of the other America knows that there is a poverty that is the wealth of the world. Viva the poverty of Cuba that makes even the comrade on the cross applaud. Viva the dignity of Cuba, whose island arms stretch all the way to the equality of love that is Africa. There is a man who has understood that life is worth nothing if it is not free, and freedom nothing if it is not consciousness of necessity, principled, palpable, and priceless. That is Fidel. That is Fidelidad. Be well, Comandante. Mm. Feliz cumpleaños. Mm.
I am F-R-R. You running. Oh, Frank is running for president.
Wow. Oh,
in what fact, have a button.
Frank.
Grazie.
Frank.
Bravo.
Frank. That's wonderful, Frank.
What? Your platform? Frank wants me to read you his platform. All right. Let's see. Boom. Home. Frank Moore for president. Okay. Platform. Frank Moore's presidency, 08. I'll do away with welfare and social security. Instead, every American will receive a minimum income of $1,000 a month. This amount will be tied to the cost of living and will not be taxable. We will have universal prenatal to the grave health care and universal free education with equal access. I'll do away with all tax deductions for over $12,000 income. Instead, there will be a flat tax of 10% on annual income of less than $1 million for an individual and less than $5 million for a corporation. But the flat tax will jump to 75% on annual income exceeding these limits. I'll cut the military budget by at least half. Public mass transit will be free, 24/7, and reliable.
Good.
All patents and copyrights will expire in 20 years. Inventions, products, etc., which are developed with governmental money and or public institutions cannot be patented. All businesses selling their products in the U.S. will have to certify that their products were manufactured in accordance with this country's labor, wage, environmental, and safety laws, that they meet or exceed these, no matter where they were produced. Each city and each media market will have at least two public access channels on radio, broadcast television, cable, and satellite. Election Day will be a paid holiday. I will push for complete public funding for all political campaigns and the banning of political contributions and the use of personal wealth in political campaigns. The president should have a line veto, but the Congress can overturn this line veto by a simple majority. Also, bills should be limited to 5 pages in length and or limited to one subject.
Yeah.
An individual taxpayer will be able to direct her taxes to what functions she wants to support. But corporate taxpayers should not have this option. Every corporation should come up for a renewal every 25 years, at which time it must prove that it has been operating in the public interest. If it fails to do this, it loses its right to exist. Corporations that have existed before this policy will have 10 years before they will have to prove they are worthy. Governments should leave marriage to churches. Instead, any two or more adults who have been living together for at least 2 years should be able to register as a, quote, family.
Good.
Bravo. I'm voting for
you. A lot of things, yes.
Yeah.
All right, you got a couple of votes there tonight.
Oh, you got more, I'm sure. That's a good program.
Can I? I N include you in his list of endorsements?
Well, of course. Absolutely.
John Sinclair is on that list.
John, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
About time we had a poet right up there at the top.
Exactly. Yeah. Paul Krasner also has endorsed
Paul,
Frank.
Oh, no, I think you get many endorsements with that.
Yeah.
You know, have many people seen it? It's very good.
Yeah.
So you have John Sinclair and Paul Krasner.
A. N. Annie Sprinkle.
Mm. Now, when are you going to get to the same people?
Sane. Are there any same people?
Yes.
Should we have a S-A-N sane T-A tax? A sane?
A sanity tax?
A sanity tax. You get taxed if you're sane?
Yeah.
Very good. Good idea, actually.
Yeah, 75% of the brain is taken away. Oh, dear.
Would you read?
Well, I sort of, to counteract the ones that Jack read, I think I read.
To counteract.
Not in the same vein. I thought I'd read something different. I don't know. I can't remember what I read when I was last here anyway.
They?
Did I read Time's Shadow is Burning? No, that's too... We have had all that. Let's read something different for a change. I've got one, I wrote to Jack when he was, it's a birthday poem. I could read that.
Oh. You want to read that?
No, maybe. I read it, but I read another one.
Okay, all right.
For your breath, 70 years of it, a kiss on your silver hair, every strand. I want you to know, before I run out of breath, before I put candles in my hair, that the lines on your face, deep and playful, light and thoughtful, tug at my heart like an old poem. Falling on new ink, cutting through the humdrum, sweet spark angels of Zim Zum. Giant brush in your hand, splashes across the room, onto the world's canvas and my clothes. Pollock's little children, strange how it goes, this song, lullabying itself in and out of your mouth, not quite knowing what will come next, but absolutely sure it has no other intent than to be in this moment. When the day's book closes, the night opens another one, a crackling sound at dawn. Zubel kib fimbel sob tribe kibi fuba fuba skapala toa boom! I take this to mean roughly the revolution is on its way, and that's the way it is with you. Foot and heart into the fire, the world's oldest newsboy, the world's young spirit, fearless and kind, the best hugger in town to all. Forgotten voices in your pen, bursting out, bursting through, in cascading cadences, oh happiness, your face in the morning. Oh happiness, your hand on my back, your freshly cut words tumbling out, a giant rainbow bends across the world, your smile, seeing it every day, such joy. And now, the moment of conception, we can't but say Kodeshor, and that light out there is her, the girl with candles in her hair, Santa Lucia, and everyone with her, wishing you happy birthday, beloved light, wishing you love and light.
Wow, really? Wow. That's beautiful.
My birthday, because my birthday is Santa
13th
Lucia,
of December.
December yeah. 13th. So she wrote a poem in 70 lines.
Yeah.
One doesn't line for each year.
I have to add to them every year. In fact, I added two lines because... And then in one too, I wrote to my mother, called Somewhere Near the Eye. Wing beat of fate puts you there between the ribs. She in a multi-layered coat, stepping out of white snow, tall and proud, bending over the cot, bending over backwards to please. Who she was she. Grey hair at the beginning, a faint smell of perfume powder somewhere near the eye. Whoever said you had to be happy, as if happy was a birthright. The lioness with a cub, thought everything in her path a gift from God. To think we all came out from roughly the same hole, striving for the light ice squeezed. To think how nice it would be to sometimes crawl back in again and curl up in our mother's nest, uncut, unbroken, to begin again at the beginning, squeaky clean. Honey. They say honey a lot here. Mm-hmm. And sugar too. What to do with all that sugar, I don't know. The sweetest thing I ever saw, tasted of citrus through and through, sharp and sweet at the same time. And there she is again, in the midst of bombs falling, bending forward, reaching down to lift the terrified child to her calm.
Wow, beautiful.
Not bad, not bad. Good.
Well, I read one to you, eh?
How is he
to live
with? I want dirt. He wants the dirt.
D-O-N-T A-N-S-W-E-R.
Don't answer.
What did you say?
Don't answer.
Yeah, don't
answer. He wants dirt.
He wants dirt.
I'll write to you. You know, I'll write to you and tell you the truth. It's quite sweet, really.
They want dirt.
Of course they want dirt. You want dirt?
They want dirt. Ah, yes.
Yes, a bit of...
Frankie, very conscious. Audience conscious, Frankie. Yeah.
Always.
Yeah. He likes sex.
Very
I can tell you that
did
much.
Did you catch that?
Yes,
he likes sex.
I can tell you that much. He's not bad for an old chap. 73.
D-U-duh.
Duh?
That meant, that's not news. Yeah. You need to figure that out for yourself.
You already figured that one out.
That's obvious.
That's not too far to go. Yeah, I understand.
Yeah. You should read his poems, you know, the ones he's just come out with a big book of arcanes. It's just full of filth and muck and beauty.
Yes, this book is...
R-E-Read read them. Read that.
He hasn't got them with him.
I don't have the book with me. It's a book the next time. This is a book of 1,000 pages that's just been published in Italy, but in the American language only, of all my longer poems. Mm. I think the last time I was here, I may have read an arcane against the war about Iraq. Or,
yes.
And, well, they've all been collected. It's 126 of them. It's 1,000 pages long.
Wow.
It's a huge book, really, that's just been published. But because of Hakon's book, I thought tonight, since we wanted to read a few of Hakon's poems as well.
Yeah, just see if they have a smutty, lovely...
You like smutty
stuff. He's looking for smut.
Very smutty.
Oh, I got... No, this is not exactly, but I feel very strongly about... It's called spermatosis. And I don't think I have it in English. I have it in Italian. I don't think that will do.
Have W E well we R E A reach Italy. So those who are listening from Italy would understand.
Oh yes, our dear friends.
Il cazzo del mondo.
Oh
yeah.
Oh.
The world's cock has run amok. Inside it live a million slaves. Inside this little peepee hole that can't have enough, quick enough. Si regisce to a high hallelujah, forgotten. Dentro questo ingordo, buco della pipì che non è na. This greedy little thing that can't have enough quick enough. in what is it?
Mamma mia, this is this translation.
In a brufolo suspended.
You need to, you can't read this straight out. You need to have the
see if I can find it in my translation here, but I have taken that out. I'm
I
sorry.
Think you have taken it out.
A. Yeah. Yeah. N. E.
Sorry.
Next time.
Next year. Next year, and don't forget, I'll read you just this as we say good evening, because don't forget we have to come back or go back over across the bay.
Yeah.
So don't forget
stupid
now. One day, I'm going
to
give up writing and just paint. I'm going to give up painting and just sing. I'm going to give up singing and just sit. I'm going to give up sitting and just breathe. I'm going to give up breathing and just die. I'm going to give up dying and just love. I'm going to give up loving and just write.
I found this. I found it.
Oh, she found it.
It's,
oh, yeah.
It's not. It's actually a very angry poem about this. Spermatosis. The cock has run amok. Inside it, it lives a million slaves. Inside this gluttonous peepee hole that can't have enough, quick enough, cheap enough, it stiffens to hilo hallelujah. In a pimpled jockstrap stretches its greed to grab at saplings from the third world, who are comatose with fear and obedience as it spreads its spermatosis all over nature's sweet breath. These lascivious beasts waddle about in porno space without a stitch of shame and play hide and suck. And the world's innocence again and again and again is mortally fucked.
Wow.
You know the ones
she writes those poems too, you see.
No, the one. This was not sexy. It was just, I saw this little girl. It was in Italy. It was a picture of this girl of being one of those pedophiles. And it just got me, you know. It's, who can't enjoy sex for what it should be enjoyed. And
so good.
So there you go.
Would you
yeah.
read my N I G night. Let's see, you're asking Aggie or Jack,
yeah, Jack.
Jack, if he would read your poem, Night.
Night?
All right, I'll find it. Oh, it's not in here? Yeah.
Where is it?
Night. My night at the cafe ruined. This is on the theme.
That theme.
At the cafe ruined. It's three pages. Starts right
here.
Here
we go.
All right.
My night at the cafe ruined. Frank Moore, by Frank Moore, on the February 25th, 1903. Oh, this poem is shit. I might as well be writing an essay, like I told the cops when they asked me are you with those poets? Hey, Peter denied being with Jesus three times before the cock crowed. But they ain't no Jesus, just poets whining about poetry being censored, being thrown out of the cafe, because they wouldn't follow the house rules to promise the poetry would not offend anybody, to give a warning of possibilities of offense so that earplugs could be inserted. Now, I agree that the rules are fascist. I told the cultural gatekeepers my opinion. I try to be the voice of reason, try to mediate. I am a nice guy, after all, but the immature poets, obviously age ain't a sign of maturity, started reading poetry right here in the cafe after their permit had been revoked. Embarrassing. I mean, I was embarrassed. I mean, I started chatting loudly to drown out the forbidden words, to not be connected to the untouchables actually yelling about censorship and freedom. Thank God the powers turned up, the Muzak, but the savages just scream poetry. That's when I started writing my poem. After all, I am a poet. But my focus has been shaken by poets being dragged very roughly across the floor right in front of my table and being booted outside. It's a wonder I can write at all. They have put armed police protection around the cafe as I write this. That's better, but still the sounds of struggle outside invade the cafe, just like the sweet smoke gets into my house from the soap factory next door. Some fools say it is a death camp. Fools, no one would put a death camp in our neighborhood. Oh, Christ, the loonies are actually reading poetry outside in the bitter cold, right outside the big window, right next to my table. They are making eyes at me, trying to make me feel guilty for being a poet, sitting warm inside, sipping coffee, writing poetry, when poetry is locked out. Well, it won't work. I just moved to another table, my back toward them. Don't they realize the real censors are right-wingers? Lady Bush, Helms, brown shirts with their black lists. We nice, reasonable people ain't censors. We are artists and poets, after all. We are family, after all. We ain't the enemy, after all. And we will make you look like feeble-minded whiners if you dare come after one of us, the reasonable people. Damn, they're still out there. I can't leave. Going through raw poetry between home and me. I'm trapped listening to Phil Oates singing on the jukebox, A Small Circle of Friends.
Bravo! Great!
Bravo!
Bravo!
For the sure.
That's so good. Right.
E. No, R. No, E. R. I. Erica. B. B. O. O. Book. Oh, Erica's books.
Book.
Her job is at the Claremont Retirement Home. It's a large retirement community in Oakland, and she's the director of enrichment.
Okay.
So she books events for the residents.
Okay.
Yeah, and what about that?
For the
would you see O. Consider reading at a place like that, at a retirement community?
Well, of course. I mean, sure. But only we are going to Europe.
Yeah.
But when do you... could it be after November or December?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Sure.
We've read it many times in places, I don't know, hospitals.
Sure,
I mean,
we've read it at a very cancer clinic in Sacramento up there. It's quite interesting. A guy we know, Chip Spann, who's a poet and who teaches poetry up there, and all of these folks with cancer really writing some incredible stuff. Mm. And so we went up there and read one time.
Her group writes poems. She does where they take turns and like, you know, kind of create a poem together.
Sure, that's great.
Like a sort of Chinese whisper type thing. Almost.
Yeah. Well, the exquisite corpse. The
exquisite corpse.
Right. Yes.
We have a lot of poems. They would probably really like this too.
Next year, dirt.
Filth.
The word. All right.
All right, we know. We got our orders for next year.
A whole year to work on.
The
filth.
Gotta work on the filth.
Okay, so let's say who you are. Jack Hirschman and Agneta Falk Hirschman. Or do you just, how do you
just
do
Agneta
it?
Just
Agneta
Falk.
Agneta Falk.
Hyphen Hirschman.
Bravo.
Kills every poet E better than him. He kills every poet that's better than him. so that he's the best poet, the best living poet.
That's very good.
The best living poet right here.
Very good.
He kills every poet.
That's very good.
The closing words. Okay.
The best living.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
That's great. Did we give you the copies of this?
Do you have the copies over there?
Yes, I do.